Today's episode is being sponsored by artist, author, and longtime friend of the PCPS, Anne Pellegrino, who has created one of the cutest, most fun, and infectious Gen X journals that's truly a creative trip down memory lane. The Gen X Journal is so much more than just a journal. It's a retro activity book for people of a certain age, filled with journaling prompts. I love that. I never know what to write in my journals. Coloring pages and cute doodles themed around our childhood and teen memories. What did your bedroom look like? Describe it or sketch it out in the journal. What favorite toys do you remember? What songs were playing at school dances? You can make your own mixtape right in the journal. You'll find over 80 pages of cute illustrations, fun topics, journal prompts, and lots of room for your own writing and drawings. Spend some time recalling long-forgotten favorites and, most importantly, getting in touch with your younger self. We love this journal so, so much. And it's available where you buy books or through the link in the show notes of this episode. Again, it's called The Gen X Journal, and it's created by Anne Pellegrino, who is Spot Girl Design on socials. And trust us, her art is beyond darling and whimsical. Go to spotgirldesign.com to check out all of Anne's incredible designs. Thanks for sponsoring this episode today, Anne. And more importantly, thank you for creating such a fun and fabulous journal.
In the number 9 spot is Laughter in the Rain by Neil Sedaka. And I'm sorry, but I did not appreciate this song enough when I was a kid.
Well, Carol did.
Oh, I gotta say, I'm so
Carol
glad.
Was
oh.
so happy.
Walking hand in hand with the one I love.
Also, right.
This list is bonkers, you guys.
I know. It
Don't
is.
You think? Yeah. This
it's
list
a good
is
playlist.
Bonkers. It's high. This list is from 1975. This list has been smoking some weed.
Hello, world. Here's a song that we're singing. Come on, get happy. A whole lot of loving is what we'll be bringing. We'll make you happy.
Welcome to the Pop Culture Preservation Society, the podcast for people born in the Big Wheel generation who advertised their mood on their ring finger.
We believe our Gen X childhoods gave us unforgettable songs, stories, characters, and images. And if we don't talk about them, they'll disappear like Marshall, Will, and Holly on a routine expedition.
And today, we're saving many of the things celebrating their 50th birthday this year, the pop culture nuggets of 1975. I'm Carolyn.
I'm Kristen.
And I'm Michelle. And we are your pop culture preservationists. Was 1975. Saturday mornings meant Scooby-Doo and Schoolhouse Rock. Saturday nights meant the brand new Saturday Night Live. And every night meant arguing over who had to get up to change the channel on the family's one TV. Although everybody was just watching ABC, so I think that might have made things a lot easier in 1975. Honestly, like every hit show was on ABC.
And they always won Battle of Network Stars, too.
That's right.
I know. Mm-hmm. They did.
The big winners.
We Gen Xers were playing with our Evel Knievel stunt cycles, clutching our pet rocks like they were real pets, and begging for Land of the Lost lunchboxes to show off in the school cafeteria. Or for Carolyn and Kristen, their Apple's Way lunchbox.
Which nobody knows but us and one other person.
Right. Jaws made us afraid to go in the water, and every basement in America echoed with the sound of Pong. Can't you guys still hear it?
Oh, yeah.
Blip, 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 blip.
And then blip, 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 blip.
Yeah.
That's going to go in our sound museum.
Blip. We drank Slurpees and rode around town on our banana seat bikes until the streetlights came on, and the three of us were living in it, living in the gloriousness of it all. Oh, to return to that 1975 simpleness, you guys.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I was 5, turning 6. Kristen was 6, turning 7. And Carolyn was 9, turning 10. And today, we are older and we're going to have a big, we're going to have a big 50th birthday party for the Pop Culture Nuggets of 1975. Do you guys feel though, like 1975, just like, I don't know, I can almost see like the font, like it's written in a groovy font.
Oh, yeah.
I know we've talked about, we've had a whole episode devoted to 1976 and we've talked about all the amazing things that happened in 76. But for some reason for me, just 1975, I don't even think it's because it falls right in the middle of the 70s, but to me, that's the epitome of the 70s.
Well, and it was, if you think about it from like a numerical standpoint, we're bridging the gap between the early 70s and the late 70s. So it's like bridging the gap between hippies and disco.
Well, it's, but that's actually a really good point because that decade is wildly different from the early 70s to the late 70s. So much changed in everything, all kinds of pop culture, from movies and music to toys and what we were doing, basically, and politics, too.
Yeah. And we were, this is a pivotal word, a pivotal, pivotal year for me, because this is the 50th anniversary of me moving to Minnesota. I transitioned from a Californian to a Minnesotan in 1975. I moved from a small rural town to a city. And when you change regions like that, you change cultures. And so there were a lot of cultural moments that I remember really well. Everything, all of my memories are sharper because there was so much drama in my life in 1975. I made this huge change. It was like I moved to a different planet.
Yeah.
Yes. And you refer to that time so often
all the time in the
episode. So I can only imagine just how
clear, clear as a bell.
That's a good
as a bell.
How clear 1975 is in your mind and all the emotions that went along with things as well. So,
and it was almost like a, you know how you they say that you remember songs from your coming of age. So you remember everything from when you're 14 because you're coming of age. But when you make that kind of a change, that's a form of coming of age. So I have all of those moments are so clear. I can all the songs. I know all the songs. I know all the shows. It's like I was a grown up. That's how this is such a coming of age for me.
Well, do you have like emotions?
You were six turning seven.
Oh, yeah.
I was going to say,
right?
She was a grown up.
Yeah.
Those of you who know,
at
age six turning seven, she might have 38,
pretty
turning
much
39.
Yeah. I was pretty
I'm
much
curious
the same.
Though, because I'm trying, did you want to move? Was there like a sadness in the move like I had when I was in middle school, or were you just like, I'm moving?
It was, it's different because when you're young, you can come in and out of emotion a lot more easily than when you're a teen or a preteen. And so I was, I had a little bit of trepidation. I was a little bit nervous. And the moment of leaving was very sad, like the literal getting in the car and saying goodbye to the neighbors and driving away. That was sad. But everything else from it was new and exciting. And I am nothing if not excited by novelty. And my mom had done a really great job of selling this move to us too. It was her job to make us excited about it. And she did a great job. And she led with Mary Tyler Moore. So that was, I knew where I was going. It was going, I was very familiar because I could see
old.
It on TV.
Well, you know, Kristen,
she's like,
six years old.
I'm like, yes, I get to be married.
I'm going to get a job. It's going to be great.
Can
I'm going to work
Kristen
downtown.
With like a little briefcase just marching to her own beat as she's 6 years old, with carrying her Agatha Christie around or whatever. I just I can't.
So I was five turning six and we moved from Texas to Arizona. It wasn't my first move. It was my first move out of state, but it certainly wasn't. We had moved around Texas a lot, but so that's I started kindergarten in 1975 in Mesa, Arizona. But I fashion wise, I looked like a little businesswoman too. Cause I always wore the blouses with the big bow on my neck.
Even in kindergarten, you did? That's really early for the big bow.
Absolutely. I did. Yes,
oh
I did.
God. I was still wearing pointy collars at that point, I think.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, 1975, as you said, Michelle, was the year that I turned 10. And I have this distinct memory. And it's so crazy how I have it. And I can tell you, I was at my friend Chrissy Williams' house. It had to be maybe right before school was starting. My birthday's in September. We were sitting on the floor in her living room watching Ryan's Hope, the soap opera.
As
I mean,
do.
I'm 10.
Sure.
Yes. You know,
which would have just started, I think. I think Ryan's Hope had just begun.
And it was only 30 minutes. So I kind of felt like, oh, this is one we can watch. Because all the other soap operas at that time, I think were an hour long. So this one I felt like...
It was right before All My Children.
Yeah, it was made for kids. I don't know what I thought. But I remember having this kind of epiphany that in this moment I was thinking, I'm going to have two numbers in my age. Like when big. You go from 9 to 10, this is huge. And this like feeling just kind of overcame me about... being this two-digit age now. And I remember just what was on TV when I just had this kind of realization that I wasn't going to be a kid anymore. I was going to have a one and a zero.
It's like a form. It's a form of a teenager.
Yes.
His brains are so weird.
I know.
Yes. That's what you remember. Like, think about it. Yes. Like, I think about so many milestones that my kids even will say, remember when we did this? And I'm like, no. But you're remembering funny? Like that feeling. And I can remember like something I said in kindergarten to a little boy one time, like one day, like random. Just a random day. Mm-hmm. But I remember where I was. I remember the words that came out of my mouth. I remember our brains are weird.
I know.
They are.
So amazing. Fascinating.
Mm-hmm. Well, this month's print issue of Remind Magazine celebrates 1975. So we thought we'd kind of take their issue to the air and talk about some of these things that we loved and watched and played with, hated, talked about, et cetera. I'm going to show you, if you're watching this on YouTube, you can see this month's issue. And we have things like a whole article about Welcome Back, Cotter. But then it was really fun. This was the inspiration for this episode because there's like a time capsule, right? And it has everything from like movies and music and all the things. And they all bring back so many great memories that we thought, we hope that they would do the same for all of you listening. So this should be really fun. And even if you weren't born, I want to say another thing. If you're a Gen Xer listening to this and you were born in 1975 or you were a baby or you weren't born yet, you're still going to love this because every single thing we're talking about kept going. Right?
Yeah.
You will have memories of these things from the late 70s, the early 80s, and you might go, no way, that was from 1975. Also, it's always just good to have this kind of trivia under your belt.
All right, you guys, we are going to start with a list of the TV premieres that happened in 1975. So buckle up because who knew this goodness all came in one fell swoop in 1975? We've got The Jeffersons.
Well, we're moving on up, to the east side, to a deluxe apartment in the sky. We're moving on up, to the east side. We finally got a piece of the pie.
I'm not going to tell you where it appeared in our countdown of the greatest TV theme songs of all time. Let's just say it was high. It was very, very high, and I am all there for it. And I may have ranked it as my personal number one because it just got you up and stamping
it
your feet.
It sure did. It sure did.
It seemed like you're in like a church, like one of those Southern churches.
Yeah.
Like we want to clap. And
And then can you see him like walking in like this? Sherman Helmsley's doing this with his arms.
Yes, of course.
He's so their neighbor, funny. That goofy, tall neighbor.
Mr. Bentley.
Mr. Bentley. Oh, my gosh. Yes. And you know
or
what?
Or the painter, the number painter in Sesame Street.
Yeah, that's the same guy. The number painter is Mr. Bentley.
We have coming up next Barney Miller, which I did not watch, I have to say. I remember it.
I was in and out. It wasn't one of my favorites, but again, theme song.
Great. Oh, I don't even know. What's the theme song?
Do 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 do.
I hated it. Anytime it was on, I was like, no, it's just all these angry men, I felt like. And it probably wasn't, but in my mind, anytime it was on, they were
same.
Old. And they were old to
That's
me.
That's true. Were there any women
probably
on the show?
In their late 30s.
I don't know if there were any women. And they were so grumpy. Like Abe Vigoda.
Yeah.
I mean, gosh, his name, Abe, but it even sounds mean and just grumpy. All righty. So we're going to move on from Barney Miller to Space 1999. And I'm just holding my hands up going, what is that? I don't remember
I've
that.
I've never heard of that. Never.
I haven't either. So we'll move on from that and go right to Welcome Back, Cotter.
Theme song
welcome
again.
Oh, my
God. Your dreams were your ticket out. Welcome back to that same old place that you laughed about.
John Sebastian. Do we even need to?
Yes. I mean, look at three shows from 1975, which is just one random year, and it's not even the three biggest shows. It's just three shows that started, and we have three banger theme songs that we remember 50 years later. I just wonder what theme songs from today will people be singing in 50 years?
All righty then. Good Morning America. And early on, just because we've talked about how much we loved ABC, that was my go-to show, morning show, up until probably I graduated from college, and then I was all about Katie Couric and the Today Show.
Me too. My timing is exactly the same as you.
Yeah, the morning was, it was David Hartman and,
Sandy Cahill.
Yes. Oh, yes. Gosh. They were so sweet. And what's her name? Now I can't even think. Our blonde friend.
Jane Pauley?
Yeah. No.
She's not Jane Pauley. Diane.
No.
But I know who you're talking about. Who
Jane
is it?
Jane London?
Joan London.
Yeah. Joan London.
Yes.
We're sorry. They're screaming at us again, our listeners.
I had no idea that this started in 1975. It had always just been there. And so my memory of it started in 1975. Now I know that's not a coincidence. And so we moved to this new place. And as soon as we moved, the first thing that we bought was this tiny little Panasonic TV, 13-inch black and white little bubble TV. And it would sit on our kitchen counter. And in the morning, we would watch David Hartman and Sandy Cahill on Good Morning America before going to school.
Yes. So there's a lot wrapped up in some of these pop culture nuggets that we're going to talk about beyond just it was entertaining. Yeah. There was other stuff going on in our lives at these moments that live in us. And so, so you probably hear the theme song from Good Morning America or hear David Hartman's voice and you're in kindergarten again or whatever.
And those random things that we remember, like you said, Michelle, at the top, like you remember a random thing that you said to some kid and that kid probably didn't remember it the next day. I distinctly remember seeing Marilyn McCoo and Billy Davis Jr. Billy Davis Jr. No, Billy Preston Jr.
No,
sorry.
It's Billy Davis Jr.
It is.
Billy Davis.
I promise.
Preston.
Okay. Well, I don't know. He's somebody else. He's not.
Oh my God. Because
remember, I was always upset because Billy Davis Jr. was shorter than Marilyn McCoo.
You don't know.
Oh, I love that song.
Yeah.
That's such a great song.
Yeah. I think it was one of your top picks. Did we do a 1975 or 6 or something?
Yes.
And Carolyn, you love that. Yeah, I remember that.
I do love it.
Yeah, you don't have to be a star baby.
And I'm sure I talked about their height difference.
You did.
That still sticks with me. I can't tell you why.
Yeah.
Probably because I'm tall and I was super tall in terms of, the difference between boys and girls. And I was always the tallest in my class. And I always would think, well, am I ever going to get married?
You'll have to be 100 years old.
I can't have a shorter husband. And just because Marilyn McCoo does. It's just not right. Okay. Now we have one of our favorites for sure. Although, I don't know if this was ABC. Maybe it was. But this was Linda Carter as Wonder Woman.
All the world is waiting for you. And the power you possess. In your satin tights, fighting for your rights, and the old red, white, and blue.
Again, theme
so
song,
good.
Yes. Theme songs.
They and just it tells keep the story. I mean, remember how we talked about that?
Yeah,
how they tell the story of the backstory that kind of helps you understand the whole show.
Like, that was the purpose of the theme song. It was setting up the premise for you.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And it's also just because, like we talked about in our theme songs episodes, and I think we've had two of those, 70s theme songs and 80s theme songs, but that they just don't make them like they did in the 70s and even in the early 80s. I mean, even the instrumentals were pop hits, were radio hits.
Right.
But especially the ones with lyrics, they were just so great.
Yeah.
Linda Carter has quite the presence on social media nowadays.
She's very fierce.
She's a fun follow.
She is. And so is Lindsay Wagner. And I'm manifesting our Power Woman episode where we have both of them on, single women, didn't need a guy, Steve Majors or whatever, or Steve Austin. He was always still after her. And she was like, I don't need a guy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so I think those were some of the people that, like, you can be strong. You can jump over buildings and hear people from miles away. with, you know. Yeah. Anyway.
You know what, though? It's just basically they kicked ass. And I feel like in the 70s, the way they had to show women kicking ass was to give them a superhero cape or a bionic ear, which is kind of a shame. But there is a show
Angels
coming up.
Kicked ass.
That's true. And there's another show coming up that was a sitcom about with a single woman.
Oh,
and,
yeah, that's true.
She kicked ass just with her attitude and everything. So that's I guess
just think about
maybe
it.
It was all over.
Yeah. And I don't know that our moms had any shows where a female character was kicking ass. I mean, obviously wouldn't have called it that back then. But
I think the closest we would get, and I wouldn't call this kicking ass because she was still a sidekick, was my mom was really into Dale Evans, Roy Rogers and Dale Evans.
Person, too. I mean, she wasn't a character.
She's like, oh, she's a character on Roy Rogers and Dale Evans. They're still on the TV show.
But she is Dale Evans.
Yeah, she is. Yeah.
It's not like her name is Linda Smith.
But I don't think she's actually a cowgirl.
But kind of, well,
like
she probably lives in Beverly Hills.
Kind of what? Whatever.
I think she was.
Dale Evans.
Let us know, but I think Dale Evans was actually a cowgirl.
But I'm not saying that satisfies it.
No, okay.
All righty. Well, the next one, one of my favorites. It doesn't have any women in it, really, but they need to because it was Starsky and Hutch.
Carolyn, I will never forget her telling us one time that she had Starsky and Hutch knee socks.
Knee socks,
and that
yes.
has just stuck with me because I love that factoid about 10-year-old Carolyn so much.
Yeah, I love it too. And I, again, because I was tall probably to be knee socks, I had to really pull them up. And so their faces were like, what? They were just like, they didn't even look like Starsky and Hutch.
Like they were a fun house mirror of your calf.
This is not the stuff you think about. This is the reality of life, people. If you have tall,
but at the same time, I wasn't wearing those with shorts. So really, I was the only one who saw
Why
them.
Why not,
or,
though?
You know, some people actually, because my pants were kind of high waters. Remember, everyone make fun of me if
you
had high waters.
And you had to wear your colonial shoes.
My pilgrim shoes with my Starsky and Hutch socks.
Yeah.
No, in 1975, I kind of graduated, I think, from those shoes. I think my mom, maybe after fourth grade, my orthopedic shoes.
Yeah, her giant orthopedics.
Okay. Saturday Night Live, everybody. Oh. We are well aware of that. We've been living at this last year as we celebrated their anniversary.
Yeah, they've been celebrating the 50th, though, I think for 3 years. Like, it seems like it started. And did you guys know that the actual date of the premiere was in like October. It was in the fall of 75. Oh. They started these celebrations like a year and a half ago. It's just like the anniversary that never ends because you know there'll be a big deal about it this fall again.
Right.
You know what's weird is that there's no way I would have been watching it in the first season. You would think, or the second or the third or the fourth. However, I have memories of that cast and I don't know.
Yeah,
is it because
is
at some point I was able to stay up and watch it? Is it because they, I can't imagine they did them in reruns. I don't know.
How does that work? Because we know those sketches. We definitely knew those people. I knew them
as
people.
We knew Roseanne, Rosanna Dana.
We did.
We knew the Weekend Update. Mm-hmm. We knew Candygram. We know all the classics. Uh-huh.
And there are certainly things that would have come out in celebrations and like reunion episodes, but we knew them at the time too.
Right.
We knew about Leanne Sharp at the time.
They were a part of pop culture. Again, we didn't have, as we've talked about so many times, as many options. And so a Saturday night at 10:30 or 11:30 or whatever, it was easy to go to work on Monday and say, did you see it? And everybody kind of saw it. And so those were all things that you could go to school or and just say, you know, the Candygram or Roseanne, Rosanna Dana. We could all, everybody knew what you were talking about.
Yeah.
We don't have that again as much. You have to seek out those people that would know those things. All right. Perhaps one of my all-time favorite shows, hands down. Love it. Wanted to be in it. Wanted to be in their family. Wanted that apartment. This is One Day at a Time, everybody.
This is it. This is it. This is life. The one you get. So go and have a ball. This is it. This is it. Straight ahead and rest assured. You can't be sure at all. So while you're here, enjoy the view. Keep on doing what you do. Hold on tight. We'll muddle through.
Great theme song.
Theme song.
That's one of my favorites.
Is this the best year for theme songs? It might be.
Maybe.
It was a great theme song, a great plot line. And I do remember, well, this is probably reading now about what it meant back then, but having a single mother, like, mm-hmm. again, a strong female that didn't need a guy. Because remember, I forget his name. Was it David? I think it was David. Like, that was always pining after Bonnie Franklin. And, you know, it was kind of her boyfriend, but he wanted to get married and stuff. And she was like, no, I'm good. Mm-hmm. And we respect, I mean, that's like how we grew up saying that's an option, where our moms might not have thought that
they
was an option.
They were definitely not shown that option. Right. If they were shown that, they were shown one path. There's just one path. You get married, you have babies. That's all.
Yeah.
End of story. Or if you have no options, then maybe you could go to secretarial school.
Mm-hmm.
Or you could be a nurse or a teacher.
By 1975, my mom had already been divorced and probably gotten together, broken up, and gotten back together with my stepfather. So I was living a different life. One day at a time to me was just like, that's like home.
That's another day in the life of Michelle.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this might have come on right after One Day at a Time or in the same night. I'm not sure, but this will be Phyllis, everybody. Phyllis got her spinoff.
Big fans. We were big in San Francisco. She was in San Francisco, and her curly updo was exchanged for like a sleek bob, which was a little confusing. And little Bess was growing up.
Right.
I loved it.
And for me, there was this switch because I never really liked her on the Mary Tyler Moore Show. I always thought she was kind of mean. And when she got her own show, I was a little bit, but they kind of changed her character, I think.
Yeah, she morphed.
They made her much more palpable, at least for me. Mm-hmm. But at first I was like, why is she getting her own show? Like, nobody likes her.
Well, Rhoda got her own show, so Phyllis
everybody loved Rhoda. I didn't think Phyllis had earned her own show. I didn't think she deserved it.
Well, it didn't last very long, so you might be right.
Well, I know,
But we loved it. In the Nilsson household, we loved it. So here's my sweet spot, you guys. What was playing on the radio in 1975? What were the biggest Billboard hits in 1975? This could be the whole episode for me, as you know. So I'll try and keep it to a minimum.
What a year.
Yeah, agreed. So we're going to be bringing, I know it's traditional to bring you like the top 10 hits of 1975, but we're bringing you the top 12 because the last two, 11 and 12, are really important songs. And we want to talk about them. So in the number 12 spot is Jive Talkin' by the Bee Gees. And this comes from the Bee Gees' quasi-comeback album called Main Course, which was their precursor to Saturday Night Fever. And in my opinion, it's the best Bee Gees album. Like, I might even take that one over Saturday Night Fever.
Ooh,
really?
That's a hot take.
It's a good album.
For me, Jive Talkin' is the quintessential roller skating rink song.
Yes.
And this is checking out, right? I don't think I was going to roller skating parties in kindergarten, but I probably did in first and second grade when, the song is still great. And also this makes so much sense. 1975, it's disco is just, it's
starting
really, really starting to take off. And so, Jive Talkin'. That might be one of my favorite Bee Gees songs. I love it so much.
It's really, really good.
Yeah, thank you for keeping 12 songs in then, Kristen.
We need to do the top 12. I mean, it seems like random that they do top 10. Why haven't they been doing top 12 the whole time?
I don't know.
You guys may know, people may have heard this before, and I think we've talked about this before, that whole and the way that it begins, the ding, digga, 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 ding, I can't do it, but you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Comes from the Bee Gees lived on this little spit of land in Miami where they had to cross a bridge. I don't think it's ocean, it's canal. I don't know. You got to cross some water to get over to the place where the Bee Gees lived. And as they're crossing the bridge, the sound of their tires going over these bridge pieces is going cheek, and then they go straight to the studio and record Jive Talkin'. Okay, so yay, Jive Talkin'. Okay, in the number 11 spot, you guys, could be there's nothing further away from Jive Talkin' than this song right now. The furthest away you can get from Jive Talkin' in the number 11 spot is Thank God I'm a Country Boy by John Denver.
the most clappable song I think I know. Well, life on the farm is kind of laid back.
Ain't much an old country boy like me can't hack. It's early to rise, early in the sack. Thank God I'm a country boy. Well, a simple kind of life never did me no harm. Raising me a family and working on the farm. My days are all filled with an easy country.
You know, like just, you got to clap when you hear that.
I did a tap dance to that.
Oh, you did? I can see that.
We did. Yeah, I did a tap dance and I wore turquoise overalls. Everybody got a different color of overalls. So I was really lucky to get turquoise. And I just think that this song is so, you can't really classify it. It was so unlike anything that was on the radio or had been ever been on the radio. I wouldn't even call it country music. It was almost a novelty song.
It was, but yeah, but I mean, wow, there's some real country sound in it. If you think
about
it. It's
closer to country than disco for sure.
So much.
Well, these were the years we've talked about, I think before, this kind of crossover when we're getting Olivia Newton-John, who was kind of a country singer first, but she's kind of coming over. And we've got, we'll talk about later, another star that is a, you'd think of as country, but he's got a top song on here. And Kenny Rogers, I mean, we're starting to get that mainstreamish kind of country.
And it's not country rock.
Crossover.
That's not what it is at all. It's it's more a country that is becoming popish, that is appealing to a pop audience. And we are all here for it. In the number 10 spot is One of These Nights by the Eagles. Snore. Boring. Unless you guys have anything to say about that.
No, you hear it on like, you hear it like in a grocery store now, or you hear it in the elevator. Yeah. It's a good song.
Sorry, Eagles fans.
There's nothing wrong with that song. I like it.
In the number 9 spot is Laughter in the Rain by Neil Sedaka. And I'm sorry, but I did not appreciate this song enough when I was a kid.
Well, Carol did.
Oh,
I gotta say,
so
Carol
glad.
Was
oh.
so happy.
Walking hand in hand with the one,
the one I
also,
love.
Right. This list is bonkers, you guys.
I know. It
Don't
is.
You think? This
it's a
list
good
is
playlist.
Bonkers. It's high. This list is from 1975. This list has been smoking some weed. It is all over the place.
Laughter in the Rain is such a happiness song. This belongs on your feel-good playlist. This was a comeback song for Neil Sedaka. He had not had a hit since 1963 with Breaking Up Is Hard to Do. And I didn't really understand. I mean, I knew that he was like an old, weird-looking guy when I would see him on TV. Like if he was on Merv Griffin or something.
You're not
like,
wrong.
What are you
you're
doing
not
in 1975?
Right.
But this song, the lyrics are so good. I got laughter. I'm not going to sing the song. Whatever. Walking hand in hand with the one I love.
Oh,
how I love a rainy day and the happiness I feel
inside.
It's just such a happy, happy song. I feel so good for him. In the number 8 song was Fame by David Bowie, which, as we know, is written by John Lennon. And so when you know that it's written by John Lennon, then when you listen to the words and they're talking about how messed up Fame is, you're like, oh, because that's a Beatle. Yeah, I get that. In the number 7 spot, this surprised me. This really, really surprised me. I didn't think of this as a top 10 hit. I thought of this as more of like an R&B gem. Shining Star by... I was going to say by September. Shining Star by Earth, Wind, and Fire, which will forever be immortalized as the song that Elaine does the Elaine dance to.
That's right.
Oh, that's right.
It will never go away because of the Elaine dance. Remember when that opening comes? And then she walks out like, come on, you guys. Come on.
Yeah.
Which
yeah.
says something
so
about
great.
The song, don't you think, too, is like they chose a song that everybody's going to kind of know. I mean, it's not popular now, but people are going to remember.
Yep. Yeah. Mm-hmm. You're right. That they had, I want to be at that meeting. The Seinfeld writers are going, what song should it be? That was a whole day of meetings they had to figure out what song it should be.
Oh.
And they chose Shining Star by Earth, Wind, and Fire. In the number 6 spot, the sixth biggest song of 1975 was Some Kind of Wonderful by Grand Funk Railroad. I would have told you the song came out in 1967.
Yeah.
nobody sang anything. So that must mean we don't like this song. Okay. And the number 5 spot is My Eyes Adored You by Frankie Valli.
Yes.
You know,
Carol is so happy.
Oh, Carol is happy. I was happy too because, you know, Happy Days premiered only a year before, I mean, in 1974. So we've talked about this before, probably at our Happy Days, one of our Happy Days episodes. But, you know, everybody was really latching on to this whole 50s, this whole throwback to the 50s. And this song and the next song that you're going to talk about, both of these have a very 50s vibe to them. And they, and to be the four and the, you know, fourth and the fifth biggest songs of the year.
And the number four spot, which is very, very high.
Very
high. 1975 is Before the Next Teardrop Falls by Freddie Fender.
Yep.
If the teardrop ever starts, I'll be there before the next teardrop falls.
You guys, Carolyn just sang every bloody word of that song, and I've never heard it in my whole entire life. I've never heard that song.
I had to
listen
to it.
Doesn't happen very often.
I had to look it up, and I didn't recognize it until we got to the "He'll Be There Before the Next Teardrop Falls." And again, I go back to spending time with my dad. So I bet my dad. I listened to this song with my dad.
But and you're both in Texas, and you're in Arizona, right? So that you probably have more country radio. Or country maybe infiltrates your rock and roll station.
Well, it's not country. Yeah.
Yeah, it
that's
is.
Not, that's country.
Oh, you think?
That's twangy
Freddie
as hell.
Fender, I think.
Yeah, okay. Because I was listening to some other stuff this morning, and it was very throwback.
There's a kind of music called Tejano in Texas.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know if he's from Texas or if that would be considered Tejano.
I know that song, but I do. Here's the only way that I know Freddie Fender, because he has a funny name, and because there was an infomercial with Freddie Fender's greatest hits, and we thought that infomercial was the funniest thing we had ever seen. It was a person we had never heard of before. We didn't know any of the songs, and he had a little Gabe Kaplan look to him.
Yeah,
and
he
we
does,
were like, "Who is this dude? Who is this Freddie Fender?" And we like we would turn it on, we'd get up, and we'd like sing along to it without knowing any of the songs. I'm assuming that
it's
song
very
must have
50,
been on
if
the
it's country,
infomercial.
If it's country, it's very 50s country because it's very like Patsy Cline-ish. Because like I love it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because I started listening to Freddie Fender, the best of Freddie Fender on Spotify this morning, and I was like, "Oh, I'm kind of loving these throwback, this throwback sound," and it's very 50s. Mm-hmm. Sounding. This basically puts it in a nutshell. Combining elements of 1950s rock, Tejano, Louisiana swamp pop, and country music in his exuberant style. Fender paved the way for Latin American performers. The holidays sneak up fast, but it's not too early to get your shopping done and actually have fun with it. The three of us have loved shopping for gifts at Uncommon Goods for years because we always find the coolest one-of-a-kind gifts for everyone on our list. Some of our recent favorites? An old-school red Viewmaster that spins your own photos, a word search throw blanket with 15 of your own words woven right in, mixtape art where you customize the playlist, all perfect for your hard-to-shop-for partner, by the way. Oh, and don't even get us started on the many unique advent calendars that we know our adult children will love. But it doesn't matter who you're shopping for. Kids, teens, book lovers, history buffs, diehard sports fans, foodies, mixologists, bird watchers, gardeners, and yes, retro pop culture lovers, you'll find thousands of new and unique gift ideas you won't find anywhere else. And we love this. With every purchase you make at Uncommon Goods, they give back a dollar to a nonprofit partner of your choice. They've donated more than $3 million to date. So shop early, have fun, and cross some names off your list today. To get 15% off your next gift, go to uncommongoods.com/PCPS. That's uncommongoods.com/PCPS for 15% off. Don't miss out on this limited time offer. Uncommon Goods, we're all out of the ordinary.
Okay, what's next?
In the number three spot is Philadelphia Freedom by Elton John, which I think was the follow-up to Yellow Brick Road. Goodbye, Yellow Brick Road, if I'm not mistaken. That's a banger. The number two song, this is another one to put on your feel-good playlist, Rhinestone Cowboy by Glen Campbell.
Yep.
This is one that I'll put on today if I'm just feeling a little sad.
Of course.
And just like A Laughter in the Rain, my love of Glen Campbell has grown so much as an adult. I didn't appreciate him as much when I was a child.
No.
Yeah.
I didn't either, but my parents loved him, and we had an album, and it was just like his face on it. And that
I can
had
picture
like
that. I think I have it. Yeah.
Yeah. Your dad, I could just see your dad really liking a Glen Campbell kind of thing. But yes, he had some classic, like Galveston. Isn't that's him?
Galveston.
Which, of course, for me, is for us in Texas, is very exciting. Like, I've been to Galveston. I know what he's talking about.
Yeah. These are good. These are great. I like to call them just like Saturday afternoon, you know, just kind of in that downtime. These are good, just background music in your house to sing along to and just make you feel just happy to be alive.
But I'm going to be where the lights are shining on me. Like a rhinestone cowboy.
Happy that that's in the number two spot. That totally vibes with how I was feeling in 1975. And that brings me to the number one spot, which is legendary, very deserving of this spot. It's the song that identifies 1975 for me. I associate it with my move. And it is the most memorable of all of these songs, possibly because I believed that I saw it performed in a casino in Reno, Nevada.
That's right.
As an adult, and when I say adult, I mean like 1 year ago, I was like, no, you didn't. Let's just pick that apart. That we were talking, of course, about Love Will Keep Us Together by the Captain and Tennille. Like my number one karaoke song. It is. If you, that part where you can go, I will. It's just like the best karaoke moment of any karaoke night.
It's such a great song. And such a moment for us because of all these people, no other performer on this list was a doll. Like, you know, they made her a Mattel doll, or maybe Mattel. But, you know, like we wanted to play her with her.
With her Tony Tennille haircut. They put her little haircut on her little doll.
I had the haircut in 1976.
Yes, you did. And it was adorable.
How iconic is that?
Yes. Truly. It is. Okay. That haircut, the Tony Tennille haircut is iconic. And it, like, only got, like, pushed out by the Dorothy Hamill probably.
Right.
But they were adjacent to each
other.
They
were very adjacent.
So, and I've told this story also in many podcasts, so I'll just be very brief here. When we were driving from California to Minnesota, we stopped at a casino in Reno, Nevada. I don't know why. With their children. We were 7 and 4, and my parents, we were in a diner, and my parents went in to gamble, and they're like, don't leave the diner. And I was, again, parenting.
Your mom wasn't my mom?
Sorry. I know. It's very confusing. It is not on brand for Linda at all. And I could see through the window of the diner into the bar. And in the bar was somebody with a Tony Tennille haircut singing Love Will Keep Us Together. And I was like, oh, my God, it's the Captain and Tennille. And I grabbed my brother's hand and we ran into the bar. And I just couldn't believe I was watching the Captain and Tennille. And I believed that I saw them until just a few years ago. And I realized that was probably not them. It was probably just a woman singing in a bar.
Buddy and Lois.
Yes.
Sing the songs of the Captain and Tennille in the Red Roof Inn in
Reno, Nevada.
Reno, Nevada.
That's exactly what it was. And this song was written by Neil Sedaka, who was having a comeback with Laughter in the Rain. And you can hear in Love Will Keep Us Together when they go, Sedaka is back. Right? That's a little piece of the song. And we're weaving the top 12 songs all together.
Nice. Full circle.
I know that I did not say Sedak is back for a really long time. I'm trying to think what I said. Talk about misheard lyrics.
I know.
I think I was, and get her back. Or
I don't think I've ever known that that's part of the lyrics of that song.
Yeah. Sedaka is back.
I'll have to look it up.
A slap on the back.
Okay, well, 1975 was a banner year for toys and just new products that meant a lot to us as children at the time.
As 7-year-olds,
some of these, though, are cracking me up because there's a lot on this list that I don't think in my entire life I've ever thought they would have had like a birth year. You know,
they've just always been there,
right?
Yeah.
We have talked ad nauseum about the Pet Rock on this podcast. Yeah. So we're okay. So congratulations,
it's the
Pet Rock.
You're 50. 1975.
Yeah. Totally. Mm-hmm. Okay, but something that you cannot deny changed our lives was birthed in 1975, and that was the portable cassette recorder.
In so many ways.
How did we exist before that? I mean, we had record players, obviously, but we could record Casey Kasem at night. Mm-hmm. You could record James Vincent Minnickle on Apple's Way when you wanted his dialogue. I mean, this changed our lives for the better. The invention.
And it was,
and
Panasonic was having such a moment because if you recall, it wasn't just the, yes, we had the little black tape recorders. The important thing was that these had handles. You know, there were tape recorders before, you'd have to pick them up and carry them to the room, but these had little handles and you could bring them around.
Well, they're portable,
and Panasonic was making everything into a little colorful bubble. And so my little Panasonic TV was a colorful white bubble. And then these tape recorders were sort of like a rhombus, like shaped in a rhombus. And mine was light blue, not light blue, but like a royal blue. They came in red. I think they came in yellow also. And my dad, before we moved to Minnesota, my dad went to Minnesota to start working. And he bought us one of the blue Panasonic tape recorders.
Wow.
Because he would then record, he would read stories, he would sing songs, and he would send the tape to us.
That's adorable.
Yes, I know. And so this is where I first heard House at Pooh Corner, because my dad sang House at Pooh Corner on the tape that he sent to us. And then we would record stuff back and send it back for his tape recorder. And this is legend in our household. My brother would tell, he's only 4. And so he would tell jokes, and he would go, "Why did the robber take a bath?" And then he would wait a beat, and he would go, "Nope." To make a clean getaway. My brother still has the blue tape recorder, and he still has the white bubble TV, too.
I love that.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Okay, do you guys remember the kind of that yellow and orange Barbie camper that came with all the little vinyl furniture, like the little folding chairs, and they could never sit on it? Okay, that's not the one I'm going to be talking about. So just I wanted to be clear. That one came out in 1971, but in 1975, a Barbie VW camper came out. And you guys, we did not have this, and I want to show you a picture to see if you know
we
about
didn't
this
either.
Because I need this in my life. Do you know that this one?
Oh my God.
I've never
I want
seen
it
that.
Now.
All right,
it's like a mystery machine.
It's a red, it does look like a mystery machine.
Yes.
It's red on bottom with all this like sticker decal that are like the grooviest 70s flowers, and then the top
so
of it's
cute.
White. So I'm
cute.
Definitely gonna post this if I haven't
that
already
must
on social
be
media.
Super rare. Because why did none of us remember it?
Yeah,
I don't remember having a friend that would have had it.
Mm-mm.
And I was peak, you know, 9 going on 10. I was aware of Barbie stuff.
Okay, something that I don't know how I didn't own this, and it's something that is coveted today, but it's too expensive on eBay. But that is the Fisher-Price Play Family set that was Sesame Street. You know, the Sesame Street set?
Yeah. Yes.
I mean, I think we had pretty much every single other one. We didn't have like the houseboat or the camper, and I still own a lot of them. But how did we not have, me and my sister were so into Sesame Street. I don't know how that wasn't a Christmas present or something. I have all the figures. They're in my office now that my husband's gifted me, but I don't have the actual set. So cute. Do you guys remember the Fisher-Price cash register that was in like every preschool, church, nursery, and it's really chunky, and it has the chunky coins.
Yep.
That came out in 1975.
My sister had that. And so, but we would play store with it. Mm-hmm. So I thought that was cool that we had like, you know, a cash register, even though it was those clunky coins. But
you had 3 coins. You're like, that'll be one red coin. Please.
Yeah, that's right.
One red blue. Money. Yeah. Something that I've never thought about having a birth is, you know, there were Legos, but the little Lego minifigures, you know, the one that looks like the little people. right?
Yeah, I never even considered that didn't exist.
I mean, you guys had kids that played with Legos too, right? I did. Mm-hmm. And my husband mm-hmm. did. But all the little people with the little feet that have the, you know, that can kind of clamp down. So that, something that our listeners love when we post on Fisher Price Fridays, and that's the Fisher Price Joey doll. So Joey is joining Mary, Jenny, Audrey, Baby Ann, Natalie, and Elizabeth, who were released in 1974. But not to be, don't confuse those with the My Friend dolls like Mandy.
I'm so confused.
Those ones were released in 1977. Yeah. And Mandy and her friends, they are not babies, y'all. They're big girls and big boys. They're big kids. But Joey is one of the babies who, like I said, I still have my Baby Ann. I have Baby Ann. So those were 1975. Such a Gen X candy to this day. Pop Rocks. Pop Rocks began in 1975.
That was a life-changing moment. That was not
we would
a
put
candy.
Them on our,
it was an activity.
You would just, you'd walk around your friends with your mouth open. Can you hear it? And it's sizzling. Mm-hmm. Sizzling like bacon in your mouth.
And you
ever get one that would
alone.
Actually pop hard and pop up to the roof of your mouth and sort of be like, cut it.
You would never do it by yourself because what's the point?
Right.
You would have to have Pop Rocks with somebody.
And I remember, like, just doing a few at a time, like, trying to make my little pack last for a really long time. Like, can I get the same thrill with just a few on my tongue? So, because, you know, Lillian wasn't buying me a bunch.
Oh, God, no. No, 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 no.
We would pour a whole pouch in our mouth and start chewing them. If you start crunching them, they pop like firecrackers in your mouth. My sister and I would do that. You pour the whole thing and just go.
That scares me.
Mm-hmm. Your mouth would, like, explode.
What a just bizarre concept, too. Like, again, people sitting around and some boardroom somewhere.
Yeah. What is it actually?
I wonder what
even makes it do that.
There's a whole science about it. It has something to do with carbon dioxide, certainly.
Yeah. And saliva?
And I'm pretending like I know. Yeah, it must be triggered by moisture. People listening right now are going, you guys, like they know all. They have, there's okay. must be like a Sesame Street, like little video about it, and we don't know.
I know, right? Mr. Rogers was like, let's get into our little trolley and see how Pop Rocks are made. Okay, these are some things in the category of I never even have in my mind considered that they had to have a birth date, but Whack-A-Mole arcade game.
It's one of my few arcade games.
I love Whack-A-Mole too. You got to get both hands and you got to, but that started in 1975.
That's a lot of pressure for Carolyn.
Burger King's fish sandwich.
I do remember that
coming out. You do?
Oh yeah. It was a big deal for all the Catholic people.
Oh, probably. Yeah. You can eat it during that. We should find a commercial for that.
Mm-hmm. You know what else came out in 1975 in terms of fast food? It was the birth of the Egg McMuffin.
No way.
Kind of the whole idea of breakfast on the go. That kind of wasn't really a thing before.
No,
like, you know,
not.
You could get a whole meal in a drive through kind of a thing. Yes. Egg McMuffin. 1975.
At least anytime we go up to the mountains, we get, we both like them just plain, just with the egg and the cheese, my husband and I. So anytime we go to the mountains, we drive through this McDonald's near our house and get an Egg McMuffin. So next time I'll say happy 50th Egg McMuffin before I eat it.
Yes, I'm surprised they haven't leaned into that. And I remember the whole concept of like Canadian bacon. Do you remember that? Because that's what's on there. And it's like
ham.
That's ham. But it's not bacon. And why is it different in Canada? It's just the way our minds were at these ages and trying to reconcile words like, you know, bacon and a circle that looks like ham. No.
Why is it Canadian?
No.
Is it really
okay, the last
Canada?
One I want to mention, the last fun thing, is freshen up gum. And I have a little story.
Yes.
And it's kind of rude. So listeners, if you don't like kind of rude
is it crass?
Things, you might just
is it crass?
Yeah, you, a little crass.
Okay.
You might come back. But we laughed so hard. Well, you'll remember when we interviewed Melissa Gilbert, I think it was the first time.
Yeah.
I don't know how freshen up gum came up, but she just comes out with, we used to call it cum gum.
Oh my God, Melissa Gilbert.
But she's not wrong.
Yes, and you know,
I mean, think about it. You bite into it.
It squirts
in your
mouth.
I know that's kind of rude, but oh God, when she said it, I about peed my pants laughing.
Well,
because you're right.
Ingles.
She's not wrong.
Yes. Huh? It makes it 10 times
funnier. It's Laura Ingalls, yeah.
Because it's Laura Ingalls. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But we would be remiss in not mentioning Big Red Gum because I remember being excited when that came out. And recently, I craved the smell of Big Red Gum and I went and I bought some. And I didn't even really want to chew it. I just wanted to smell it. And now it lives in my utility drawer.
Yeah.
It smells so
big
good.
Big Red gum I liked a lot. And I chewed a lot of gum. But the Big Red to me, I liked at the very beginning. And then it started burning my tongue and like burning.
Yes,
you know,
it burned.
Was really strong.
Yeah.
Yeah,
but that nostalgia will rock your world. When you smell that Big Red again, you will tumble backwards.
And I loved cinnamon there for a while, like the cinnamon, you know, the Brock cinnamon hot things.
Yes.
And then the little, what are the little ones called that are kind of chewy?
Like Red Hot?
Yeah, Red Hot.
Red Hot, yeah.
Yes, yes.
Now they call them cinnamon imperials. Yeah.
They do? What?
Yeah, my mom was obsessed with them as when she got a lot older. And so I would have to go find them, and you could find them at like CVS. And it's hard to find when it's not Valentine's Day, but there's some places you can, like a Walgreens or something. And they don't say Red Hots. They're called, you can get like the bag of them, and they're called Cinnamon Imperials. And she also used to make applesauce a lot as she got older. Her whole life, she used to love to make homemade applesauce. And so when you boil the apples down, if you put in a little handful of Red Hots, it gives it a little bit of a cinnamon. First, it makes it pink, which is kind of fun.
Yeah.
And it gives it a little bit of a cinnamon.
Oh,
and
I
sugar
love that.
And sweetness.
That is a 70s hack right there.
Yeah.
Put in a couple of Red Hots.
You know what else is a 70s hack that has nothing to do with any of this that came out in 1975? But when I was thinking of my mom would make that, and then it made me think, oh, yeah, she made that applesauce for us when we were little. She would have completely, this 1975 would have been one of the years. But for dessert, one of my favorite desserts is she would get a can of peaches, like peach halves. So just think of a can. Pour it in a saucepan. In syrup. Oh, yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Pour it in a saucepan and just get them warm, right? You spoon out the half into a bowl with some sauce. And in the half, you know, where like the pit was, you sprinkle brown sugar, and then you put like a tablespoon of sour cream on top of it. That sounds disgusting, I know, but that was one of my favorite desserts. And isn't that very 70s?
Yummy, actually. It's very
70s.
Because it's out of a can. Like, don't go
canned
out.
Peach.
Don't go to the farmer's market and get a fresh peach.
No.
Open a can of peaches.
Right.
Well, it has to be that slippery, slimy peach, right? And you try to cut it, and it would just
sounds
like, with the side of your fork, and the peach would just like shoot across your bowl. But you, and then the dollop of sour cream on top. Not weird.
Oh, gosh. Very 70s.
We could have that at our 1970s potluck.
Okay. So 1975, big movies out. None that, the top 10 were none that we would have seen in real time.
No, they aren't
necessarily
at all.
But we probably have memories of our parents seeing it or the posters or whatever. So let me tell you what those top 10 are. I'm going to start with number 10 for you guys, and that would be Tommy. And that was the Who, right? The pinball
movie? Is that
the
Pinball Wizard, or is it different? Because I feel like Pinball Wizard came out so much earlier.
No, I think that is.
Is it? Okay.
I don't know.
I'll keep
going. I'll do a fact check.
Okay.
Okay. The Other Side of the Mountain.
I thought that was a made-for-TV movie. I didn't know that was in the theaters.
I didn't either.
Because I probably saw it on Saturday afternoons 900 times or something.
Well, right. There's a scene in it that sticks with me. That was probably just a little scene in a way. But the ski team is all – they're having a sleepover. And her friend, Marilyn Hassett's friend, has a fever. And she's like, she doesn't feel well. And Marilyn's like, you'll be out better in the morning. It ends up she had polio. She had polio. And she got and she was paralyzed, which was crazy, obviously, because then Marilyn Hassett goes on to be paralyzed because she gets an awful ski accident.
It's a double paralysis movie. That does not seem okay.
And I remember thinking, if I get a fever, that means I can like get polio. Like that is what stuck with me in that scene. And anyway, yeah, it's really sad.
Get your vaccinations, people.
That's right. Gosh, don't even. Have you not seen The Other Side of the Mountain?
I know. Gosh. Seriously, has RFK not seen The Other Side of the Mountain?
Okay, this is one that my parents love to go to the movies. So my parents, in the 70s, that's when we had babysitters. They would go to the movies, or they would go out to dinner with friends. And so Funny Lady, of course, would have been one of those movies because we know it stars one of their favorite girls, right?
My parents loved it, but I have no familiarity with it.
No, but you just know the title because they'll say, oh, we went to see whatever, and it's rated whatever. I remember my parents saw Taxi Driver. And of course, you only remember the titles, and you're thinking, what? Who cares about like someone driving a taxi? But I have a distinct memory of when they saw that. Then we've got 3 Days of the Condor. I recognize the title.
No, I don't remember it.
Yeah. Return of the Pink Panther. That's coming in at number six. Another one where the title was a little bit confusing to me.
It was very confusing.
It's the pink fiberglass, fiberglass mascot.
It's a cartoon.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But it's not.
And we went to see. So that was the first movie that we saw after moving to Minnesota. And, you know, in those days when you went to a movie, it was a big deal. It was an event. Yes. Like, guess what, kids? We're going to the movies. Yay! And then they said, we're seeing The Return of the Pink Panther. Oh, I love the Pink Panther. Yay! And so I watched that whole movie, and it's entertaining to be sure, but I keep waiting for the Pink Panther. And when the movie ends and we walk out, I'm like, where was the Pink Panther?
I know. Didn't the opening of those movies have the Pink Panther in it?
Yeah.
I feel
yes.
like the opening yes. had
they
the
did.
Animated.
They did.
But there's no part in the story.
Yeah. And so in my mm-hmm. mind, because I didn't see it, I'm thinking it was rated probably PG. How did you get to go? I didn't get to see any PG movies for who knows how long. All right. Then next is Dog Day Afternoon, which I think is about the war or something.
Yeah.
When I hear the name. So. Okay. Number four, you guys. This is another one where I have one of these moments. I remember my mom saw mm-hmm. this with my next door or her next door neighbor. My mom saw this with our next door neighbor who happened to be her best friend. My dad didn't go to this, and it was Shampoo. Mm-hmm. And again, confusing. What is this? Like the name. And then seeing like ads or the poster, because you guys, it was a male hairdresser.
Yeah.
I had never heard of such a thing. What is this? This was like, and he's holding like one of those big hair dryers.
Yes. It's on, it's streaming, and I'm going to forget what it's on. And I started watching it a few years ago after maybe a year or two into the podcast, because I was like all into watching this old stuff. And it's really cute. It like kind of still
Is
holds
it?
Up. It's very retro. It's very 1975. Oh. But just search in your, I don't know, whatever streaming services you have. It might be on something like Tubi. But for sure, my mom would have loved that movie because she loved Warren Beatty.
And it's
so when it came on TV probably a few years later, we watched it, I would imagine.
Rocky Horror Picture Show. I mean, the iconic. Mm-hmm. I have never seen that, you guys. I have never seen it. I've never done the thing.
Before, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I don't really have any desire to either.
Don't do it unless you're going to do the whole thing.
It's
because
not
for otherwise, it's going to be disappointing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I've seen
obviously
clips. I'm not a
Rocky Horror person. I've done the whole thing, the whole midnight thing in high school only a couple of times, but it's nothing that, like, there's people that they are obsessed with it and they are diehard Rocky Horror fans. And that's great. It's not like
there's a time and a place for it. And I think our window may have closed.
Maybe.
Well, and it's so interesting that it became what it became because, I mean, obviously in 1975, our generation was not even going to see it in the movie theater. So it's just that it kept playing. It kept going. Like it had enough of a draw that whole new generations of people were loving it. All right, you guys, we've talked about this before. The number one movie of 1975 by a lot is the blockbuster Jaws.
Da-da-da. Thank God. A movie we've all seen and we all know and we all have feelings about.
Yes. And so 1975, again, think how iconic. We've already talked about Love Will Keep Us Together. To me, that is an iconic song of the 70s. If I had to pick a song, it would be one of the top three I would probably pick that defined that time. And this would be the movie I would, in a lot of ways, would say. Like, two major things that happened in 1975.
Yeah,
agreed.
For sure. Mm-hmm. One movie that wasn't, didn't quite make the top 10, that I'm calling foul on, is the Apple Dumpling Gang. And you guys, that was released on July 1st, 1975. And I've said it on here before. It is such a good, that movie holds up today. It is so stinking funny. And I love that movie. I've said it before that it's probably the first movie I remember seeing in the theater. So I would have been like 6 years old. Mm-hmm. And the other day, my sister and I were texting about when we were both going back to see Jaws in the theater. And she says, This, I'm reading her text. Daddy took me to see Jaws when it came out when we stayed with them in July. You and Vicky saw something else. I think it was Apple Dumpling Gang. Mother wasn't very happy that I saw Jaws at that age because she was 9. And I, all caps, am like, oh my God, this all makes sense. Because I had just told you guys, I didn't see it, Jaws, in the theater, but I know I saw Apple Dumpling Gang. And I always used to think I saw it with my daddy. So I'm guessing Daddy and Melanie went and saw Jaws, yep, and in the same cinema, Apple, yep, Dumpling Gang, Vicky and I went and saw it. And I swear, you guys, I still have a memory of seeing it with my daddy. So I'm wondering if we loved it so much that then we went back and saw it like the next week. We used to stay with them for like the whole month of, yeah, July. So
your
I'm wondering if we
out.
Saw it again. But now I'm like, that's when it was. It was when Melanie was too young to be seeing Jaws.
This would be such a different conversation if we were talking about, you know, the movies for children released in 1975. I just, yeah, want to see if anything comes up. Movies for children.
Apple Dumpling Gang. Well, I guarantee
it would be number one. It would definitely be number,
yes,
one.
Yes, it was.
Right, because
it's
really
so
only
good.
Like one. There weren't like Apple competing Dumpling movies.
Yep. You guys, if you have listeners, let me just keep on my plug, yep, for Apple Dumpling Gang.
Yeah.
If you have Disney Plus, immediately go watch Apple Dumpling Gang again. So many things came back. Do you remember the little girl and Bill Bixby? Oh my God, he's so,
yes,
handsome in it.
Yes.
And the little girl is just constantly going, I gotta go.
Yes.
I gotta go. She's gotta go potty the whole time. And oh my gosh, you've got Don Knotts. You know, they're just the fumbling, bumbling.
It's,
you know,
the first thing that
crooks.
Comes up. When you say movies for children in 1975, Apple Dumpling Gang is the first thing that comes up. And then the next one is Herbie Rides Again.
Oh,
and
of course.
We are a Herbie
family. Yeah. Yes.
This would be a different conversation if we had had Herbie and the Apple Dumpling Gang in there.
Well, what else? Let's keep going with it.
Well,
then.
It
what
does
else?
Say Escape to Witch Mountain. Well, I never knew if it was, yeah, Escape to or from. It's,
well,
Escape.
Aren't there both?
To Witch Mountain.
But isn't there also an Escape from Witch Mountain?
Is that the sequel? Like,
well,
they get
there
stuck.
Is, yeah, there are, yeah, two of, yeah, them.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
But
Escape
I don't
to
know.
Witch Mountain. The Wilderness Adventures of the Wilderness Family.
I think I saw that. I loved like Robinson Crusoe,
yeah,
and Swiss Family Robinson. I loved when people were marooned.
That's very specific.
I know it is, but it's true.
Oh, pirates on one side chasing us, and a storm ahead waiting to tear us apart. What to do? And what of our passengers, the Swiss family, the Robinsons? What is to become of all of us?
What came out in 1975 for us? And this, uh-huh, is, there were some great ones in 1975. Strega Nona by Tommy DePaola. Why Mosquitoes Buzz in People's Ears. Ramona the Brave.
Oh.
By,
oh,
Beverly Cleary.
A favorite.
Here's a big one, you guys. Forever by Judy Blume came out in 1975. It didn't reach me until probably 1977,
no,
or so. It took a while to, because, you know, you only,
yeah,
have one copy that goes around the whole classroom.
Right.
So that takes a while.
We probably actually all read the same copy,
the same
in different,
copy,
parts of the country, because it just kept getting passed around. I was probably more like 80, 81 when I read it. But,
when it got to you.
Mm-hmm.
I think this is funny that it's on the list. The Secret of the Forgotten City, volume 52 of the Nancy Drew series. Because the number was important. And I don't,
right,
think it didn't go much further than 52. Yeah. And I think the yellow books only went to 53 or 54. That would be a good trivia question.
Yeah,
how many of the yellow Nancy Drew books are there? But here's a really important book that is celebrating its 50th anniversary, and it is celebrating it in style. And that is Tuck Everlasting by Natalie Babbitt. This is the book, of course, about a family that lives in the forest, and they've found a spring in the middle of the woods that gives them immortality. They'll never die. And the question is this a good thing or a bad thing? And it has never gone out of print. It has sold over 10 million copies. And just this week, they released a 50th anniversary edition with the original cover art, which was, by the way, by Natalie Babbitt. She was an artist
the tree.
Also.
Oh.
Yes.
That's
yes.
the one
yellow
that has the tree.
Yellow.
Tree.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then also this week was a graphic novel version of Tuck Everlasting.
Amazing.
And this is isn't that cool? This is a trend
well, yeah,
that is emerging.
Well, yeah, because you have a lot of kids who can't read, who don't have the,
right.
the capacity to sit and read the whole book, and they're still
getting.
They
would never read it otherwise.
Yeah. Right. Such great discussion comes
well,
from that
and
book.
The
I
other,
always read it aloud to my fourth graders when I was a teacher.
Yeah, right. it was always one I
such
taught.
Such great conversations. Mm-hmm. I read aloud to my own girls, too. So they are coming out with a new Audible, and I don't know if it's a new one or if it's the first one. I would imagine it's new. But Alexis Bledel, who played Rory Gilmore, and a lot of other things, especially in She's So Great. She was always so great in Handmaid's Tale. But she is reading it, and I feel like she's going to be perfect reading it. I feel
they're
like
doing, they're
is
pulling out
perfect.
All the stops mm-hmm. on Tuck yes. Everlasting this year. And I think that's really great that they're finding that there's enough, like marketing departments are finding that this book is good enough to re-release it to the world, that people today, children today, will get as much out of it as we did 50 years ago.
Yeah. And maybe
really
adults too.
Yes, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. So it's, yeah, I think that might be added to my reread list.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a great idea. I think I want to reread it, but I definitely want to listen to Alexis Bledel read it because, I don't know, I just like her voice and I think yeah. that would, I don't know, I think you'd get all the feelings from mm-hmm. that. We'll put it on our bookshop.org if it's not already there. So if
yes,
those of you
definitely.
Who want to order it and do mm-hmm. a reread, that link is in our show notes. And then we have a really fun shop over there. So we have a lot of our own favorites and we have a lot of the books we liked as kids.
Yes. Let's not forget. Let's put all the versions of Tuck Everlasting into that bookshop shop. Bookshop
I
shop.
Love it. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Perfect.
You guys, looking at Ramona the Brave, I mean, Ramona Quimby is probably my favorite literary character of all time. And she, I love those books. I was obsessed with them as a kid, but also reading them to my own kids. And just recently, Ramona the Pest and Ramona the Brave have really old copies have been in my – somebody's put them in my
oh,
little
really?
Free library in the children's. And I've been so excited. And then when I go and I check like 4 days later and it's still there – I like look down the sidewalk both ways like, I'm sorry, people. Do you not know what an iconic classic book is here? And probably the kids are like picking, you know, Peppa Pig over
That's
it.
Right.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
I know.
I can just see her. I'm with that orange cover and she's on
yes.
the swing. Ramona, wasn't that Ramona the Brave?
I do it might
love
be,
that
yeah.
One.
I would think so, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, just to sort of put us in time quickly, who were the hot teen idols in 1975? Who were on the cover of, you know, Tiger Beat and all the magazines? So that would be Donny Osmond, David Cassidy, John Travolta, Michael Jackson, the Bay City Rollers, Vince Van Patten. You guys, I pulled up 1975 Tiger Beat covers and just did an image search. He was on the cover of like almost all of them for a year, as
Vince
well
Van
as Tony
Patton?
DeFranco. Vince
that
Van Patten
surprises
was,
me.
He was
the
all
Tony
over
DeFranco
the
really
covers.
Does.
Tony DeFranco, I mean, so many of y'all loved him. We know because when we post on social media, that heartbeat, you know, the song. And they, you love the DeFrancos. Yeah.
Okay, David Cassidy.
He was a cutie,
let's
too.
Let's check the timeline on that one because I thought he walked away in 74 after that girl was killed.
Maybe, but he was still in a lot of covers because I just checked.
Maybe he wasn't doing anything and they were still pimping him out.
Yeah.
Ooh, that's
yeah.
sad. That's when he's like,
and then
I'm
if
out,
you, guys
you guys
are thinking, where is Sean Cassidy? Where's Leif Garrett? Where's Andy Gibb? They are all just emerging in 1975.
They're percolating.
Yeah, they're percolating.
Yeah. Get ready. Get ready because mm-hmm. they're coming.
Well, get ready, world, because there are some celebrities we know today that we're coming in 1975 in terms of coming into the world and being born. We have some that are celebrating their 50th birthday this year, and I'm going to shout those out to you. This year, turning 50 are Drew Barrymore, Sarah Gilbert, Eva Longoria, Chelsea Handler, Judy Greer, Michael Bublé, Jason Sudeikis, can't say it. Is it Mayim or Mayim?
Mayim.
That's what I got. Mm-hmm.
Mayim.
Mayim
Bialik.
Mayim Bialik, Charlize Theron, Tobey Maguire, Kate Winslet, Linda Cardellini, Zach Braff, and drumroll please, last but not least in any way, shape, or form, is Mr. Dax Shepard, ladies and gentlemen. All of these people are celebrating 50 years on the planet and only 10 years younger than we are. So I'm not cradle robbing to have my
most importantly. Yeah.
Path. Right.
She's
right.
already done the Shepard, math. Yeah. It's okay.
Yeah.
I can't. I'm sorry. I cannot believe that Blossom is 50. And also the little girl in E.T. is a 50-year-old woman.
Right. Like, and I think it's how we know them. Like, I would never put Eva Longoria and, like, Drew Barrymore in the same – that they're the same age. Because I only got to know, you know, Eva Longoria as this adult on Desperate Housewives or whatever, right? That was her first foray into art. So she seems so much older than – Mayim does or Drew Barrymore.
Because they're children. Those people are children.
Yes. They don't work out in my head.
Well, a lot of those people I look at, I mean, they're 6 years younger than I am, but I look and I think of Sarah Gilbert as a child too, because when I watched Roseanne, she just seems so much younger than me, right? But especially, you're right, Kristen, Mayim Bialik, like, I didn't watch Blossom. I was too old for that, but I certainly knew who she was, and in my mind, she's a child. But let's not forget,
she was a child.
When you
were adults.
But when you are, you know, if we were, say, you know, if she was 15 and I was 21 when Blossom was on, that's a huge difference. 50 and 56 is not so big, you know.
We are not hanging out.
Right. But we can now.
I don't know that I would.
Right, now we can hang out.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah. All right, well, y'all, that is 1975 in a polyester collared nutshell, and it was a year when pop culture, I think we've established, it was bold, it was weird, and unforgettable. A lot like our Gen X childhoods. Thanks, everyone, for time traveling with us. Until next time, may your lava lamps always bubble, your water be free of sharks, and your tiger beat always feature a percolating Sean Cassidy.
Get ready. Everybody get ready. This is when we'd like to send a special shout out to our supporters on Patreon. These are the people who pledge a monthly donation so that the PCPS can pay its bills. And in return, they get fun little things in the mail and opportunities to see us on a screen on our little Zoom happy hours. So this time, today, we would like to send a special thank you to SJS, Karen C. This is actually like the parade of Gen X names. Jennifer, Liz, Kim, Melanie, Tony, Jennifer Z, Karen F, Elizabeth, Cynthia, Nancy, Erin, Marsha, Michelle, and Dana. Thanks so much, you guys.
Love all those
Thank
names.
Thank you.
And listeners, if you have loved hanging out with us today, don't forget to share this episode with your besties. And while you're at it, go ahead and subscribe so you never miss an episode. It's kind of like setting your VCR to record, but only this time you won't accidentally like tape over your mom's soap opera or your brother's Miami Vice. And if you really want to and you really love us and you want to make our day, please leave us a review. And you can think of it as just passing us one of those cool little folded notes in class that says, you're totally awesome. Don't ever change.
I love that. I love that.
In the meantime, let's raise our glasses for a toast to the year that gave us Pet Rocks and the Jeffersons, courtesy of the cast of Three's Company. Two good times.
Two happy days.
To Little House on the Prairie. Cheers.
Cheers. Cheers, everyone.
The information, opinions, and comments expressed on the Pop Culture Preservation Society podcast belong solely to Carolyn, the Crushologist, and Hello Newman, and are in no way representative of our employers or affiliates. And though we truly believe we are always right, there is always a first time. The PCPS is written, produced, and recorded in Minneapolis, Minnesota, home of the fictional WJM Studios and our beloved Mary Richards. Nanu Nanu, keep on trucking, and may the force be with you.
Today's episode is being sponsored by artist, author, and longtime friend of the PCPS, Ann Pellegrino, who has created one of the cutest, most fun, and infectious Gen X journals that's truly a creative trip down memory lane. The Gen X Journal is so much more than just a journal. It's a retro activity book for people of a certain age, filled with journaling prompts. I love that. I never know what to write in my journals. Coloring pages, and cute doodles themed around our childhood and teen memories. What did your bedroom look like? Describe it or sketch it out in the journal. What favorite toys do you remember? What songs were playing at school dances? You can make your own mixtape right in the journal. You'll find over 80 pages of cute illustrations, fun topics, journal prompts, and lots of room for your own writing and drawings. spend some time recalling long-forgotten favorites and, most importantly, getting in touch with your younger self. We love this journal so, so much. And it's available where you buy books or through the link in the show notes of this episode. Again, it's called The Gen X Journal, and it's created by Ann Pellegrino, who is Spot Girl Design on socials. And trust us, her art is beyond darling and whimsical. Go to spotgirldesign.com to check out all of Ann's incredible designs. Thanks for sponsoring this episode today, Anne. And more importantly, thank you for creating such a fun and fabulous journal.